I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome to Radio Times. Like you, I'm horrified, outraged, frustrated, and heartbroken by yet another mass shooting. This one at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Broward County, Florida. 17 were killed, 15 wounded, and the suspect has been arrested. There is much we do not know, which is why our show tomorrow will be devoted to this tragedy, the 18th school shooting in 2018. David K. Johnston is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and an outspoken critic of Donald Trump. His opinion about the man dates back to the 1980s, when he was covering Atlantic City for the Philadelphia Inquirer and Trump was opening casinos. Johnston likened him to P.T. Barnum. Since that time, David K. Johnston has continued to write about Trump, investigating his financial dealings, his relationship with unsavory people, his bankruptcies and business failures, and the people along the way who have enabled him. His new book, It's Even Worse Than You Think, is about President Trump and how Johnston says his policies and appointments threaten our democratic institutions. He's got several other books, including The Making of Donald Trump, Temples of Chance. He is founder and editor of DCReport.org. David Johnston joining us here in our Philadelphia studio. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Well, thank you, Marty.
You have been covering this man longer than most reporters.
I think anybody.
Probably anybody. Do you recognize President Trump as the businessman that you covered in Atlantic City? Does he seem like the same person?
Well, he's not a businessman. He's a cash extractor. Donald never had $1 invested in Atlantic City. Every deal he did, he took money out up front. And while some other casinos remain and are profitable despite a horrendous drop, among the first to fail were Trump's, and that's because he was not a competent businessman. His own executives were constantly telling me about his incompetence. And instead of reinvesting in the business, he would just reach in and pull out cash as fast as he possibly could. And the regulators obviously let him take out more cash than was prudent.
But his personality, his use of language, his, shall I say, bombast, his accusatory statements, things that he says about people who are running against him.
He's less moderated and modulated than he was back then. And partly this is age. Despite what the Navy physician said, there's some clear cognitive decline in Donald. You'll notice that he speaks in short, incomplete sentences. It's terrific. It's terrific. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful. He's word salad, adjectives. Whereas when I knew him the most, he could carry on a conversation. He was appallingly ignorant, even about his own business dealings. One time when we had lunch and I was going through one of his business deals, I could see he was getting more and more tight and upset. And finally, he blurts out, you know, how do you know all that? And I said, well, because you put it in the public record, Donald. And I just studied the deal. And what became apparent during the rest of the meal was I knew his deal better than he did because he's a con artist. He's not a great businessman. He's a con artist.
What we're learning in the White House is that he doesn't like to read long briefs. He likes things to be summarized. He doesn't apparently read the presidential daily briefs, which his predecessors, as I understand it, read daily.
Read intensely in most of them. Donald doesn't read anything but headlines. The reason Michael Wolff, who has his book Fire and Fury out, is that Donald saw the headline of the Hollywood Reporter and did not read the account. And that's indicative of Donald's lack of diligence in looking into things and his incredibly poor judgment about many matters, but not how to promote himself and make the American public think he's something he's not.
Michael Wolff said that Donald Trump and even part of his campaign never expected to win the presidency, was essentially using the run for the presidency as a branding device, as a PR campaign. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well,
and how would we know?
Somewhat. I mean, Donald has talked about being president of the United States since 1985. He has said he is genetically superior to the rest of us. He has talked about how he should be president of the United States. I believe he did not expect he was going to win. He himself has said that. But trust me, he's delighted that he has won because it confirms his belief that, as Omarosa put it, we should all bow to him. Donald is a dictator in waiting. Fortunately, the surveys that have done of military officers now are showing that he does not have support, so we don't have to worry that he will become a dictator. But the things that I document in my new book, It's Even Worse Than You Think, that people don't know about if they haven't read it because they haven't been in the news, should disturb you about the damage being done to our government. And I think it's very important that we think of this and remember, Donald Trump is our employee. We are his bosses, and it's our government. We own it. We haven't been acting like owners. That's how we got into this situation. For decades, we have not been acting like owners.
Well, let me ask you several things. One is about the press coverage, and I remember interviewing you in the summer of 2015, shortly after Donald Trump announced his bid for the White House, and you had a list, I think, of something like 21 questions that reporters, journalists should ask candidate Trump. How would you assess, broadly speaking, the coverage of the president today?
Well, the coverage of him as president in the White House has been vastly better than the campaign. Nobody in the campaign asked the only two questions, the 21 that were ever asked, were not by journalists, but by Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. Nobody asked about Donald about his years of deep entanglement with a major international cocaine trafficker and behavior that only makes sense if they were in business together. It makes no sense otherwise. Nobody asked about his financial deals with Russians that only make sense if Vladimir Putin and his criminal gang, the oligarchs, are investing in him as a potential source of information or influence in the United States. Nobody asked these questions, even though they were all based on public documents. And I want to make this a very important point. My opinion doesn't matter here. It is what the books, the letters, the testimony Trump has given under oath that I cite, and there's one of the books has over 40 pages of notes, the other one about 25, of what he's done and what he's doing. So anyhow, the coverage by the press corps of the White House has been fantastic. The sussing out of hidden things and of lies, of everything from the 130 people who don't have a proper security clearance, the coverage of the now convicted felon and foreign agent General Flynn, a foreign agent on behalf of a Russian interest, by the way. Turkish.
Is he convicted yet?
He pled guilty.
He pled guilty.
He made a deal to plead guilty to one charge, which tells you he's seriously cooperating with prosecutors. And the other things that are going on, those have been sussed out very brilliantly by the New York Times, the Washington Post, and McClatchy, Politico, Bloomberg, AP. A really terrific coverage. But the coverage of our government, what's going on in our government, if you didn't read my book, you have no clue. And it's awful.
I do want to get to that. But do you think not just the press, but even just the public gets distracted by the president's tweets?
Well, yes. And Donald is an absolute master of getting you to look at what he wants you to look at, not what he doesn't. It was one of the things I learned about him in Atlantic City. He got coverage about all sorts of nonsense. He got national news coverage when he claimed that Kim Basinger, the actress, Madonna, and Carla Bruni, later the First Lady of France, were sleeping with him. Two of them he hadn't met, and the third one had called him a lunatic. I don't know why billionaire has mistresses per se as news. It's not in my book. But what it did is it diverted people from covering things like how he mishandled two trips by Akio Kashiwagi, one of the five biggest gamblers in the world, on whom Trump lost millions of dollars because he mishandled the situation, which I detailed in my first book, Temples of Chance, and in other things he was doing, stiffing contractors and whatnot. Donald's masterful at selling you what he wants you to sell and getting you to not look at what he doesn't want you to see.
Is that why he won, from your perspective?
Well, I think he won partly because of that. But he won in large part because of three books that I wrote, Perfectly Legal, Free Lunch, and The Fine Print, which documented how the bottom 90% of Americans' incomes were lower in 2012 than in 1967. And Donald didn't read the books. He doesn't read articles or books. But I know Donald watched me on television. And Drain the Swamp and the Washington elites are working against you and taking care of themselves and we're going to deal with Wall Street and its predations. Those all came out of my books. And in fact, I said in 2012, anybody who runs for president on the economics in these books will get elected. And Donald's unfortunately pursued the exact opposite of what he said he would do on the campaign trail, but that's classic Donald.
But does that also show a kind of savvy on his part that for whatever reason, he understood that there was a large segment of the population that felt left out? They had been promised things that had not been delivered. They saw jobs disappear. They saw income. They saw the opioid epidemic come into their town.
And he spoke to people in the language normal people speak in, while his opponent wrote
Hillary Clinton
had very smart policy papers and actually proposed things that would be much better for us, but came across, even to me as somebody who's a policy wonk, as blah 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 blah, and by the way, blah 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 blah. She didn't connect with people, and Donald did. He unquestionably connected, and not just white working class people. I know a number, where I live in Rochester, New York, I know the whole top elite group there, including a number of billionaires. A number of them support Donald. A number of them who are appalled by his racism believe that he's a competent businessman. So you can con just about anybody if you're as competent and talented at being a con artist as Donald Trump.
But it's been a year since he's been in office. And as you detail in this book, in many ways, he has rewarded the wealthy people that like him, but he has not rewarded in the same kind of way those more working class people that saw him as someone who could make America great again and make their lives better again.
And he's gotten away with it because the press coverage in those areas has been very poor. And let me give you one of the best examples. I'll bet everybody listening to this has heard that Apple is paying $38 billion of corporate income tax to return profits that are offshore. Well, it's not true. And had the journalists read the tax bill, they would know that. You don't have to be an expert on taxes like I am. All you have to do is read the bill. Apple got an 8-year loan at zero interest for 92% of that $38 billion. They do not have to bring $1 home. They simply have the right to bring it home if they want in the future. They can invest it overseas. They can do anything they want with it. They're not required to create any jobs. And that $38 billion is a 57% discount from the taxes they avoided by paying themselves offshore to themselves fees. It's like taking money out of your right pocket and putting it in your left and getting a tax deduction. This bill is quite literally the worst tax bill Congress has ever passed, but it's been sold as this great thing for ordinary people. It's not.
Well, and we're almost up in a break here, but sold and crafted by our Congress and passed by Republicans largely, but also a fair number of Democrats.
Yeah, well, Trump's ability to distract you and make you think something is true that isn't is very demonstrated in that bill and other areas. And there'll be more trouble if we don't wake up to what he's doing.
That's our guest, David K. Johnston, and he's written yet another book about Donald Trump. This one titled, It's Even Worse Than You Think, and it's subtitled, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. David spent 7 years at the Philadelphia Inquirer, moved on to the New York Times. He won a Pulitzer Prize a number of years ago for some of his writing, and he focuses largely on things like tax policy and economics. And you can join us at 1-888-477-7999. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Do stay with us. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with investigative journalist David K. Johnston, who has been covering Donald Trump as a businessman, a casino owner slash operator in Atlantic City, his various business dealings, real estate business dealings in New York, and now as president of the United States. And again, David's new book is It's Even Worse Than You Think. Let me read just a couple of lines which you include from President Trump's inaugural speech. He says, for too long, a small group in our nation's capital has reaped the rewards of government, while the people have borne the cost. Washington flourished, but the people did not share the wealth. The establishment protected itself, but not the citizens of our country. Those are beautiful and lofty words. He goes on to say, all that is changing right then and right now. Bernie Sanders could have delivered those words.
Yep.
How do you square those words and the promises on the campaign trail with what's happening in the White House?
He's done the exact opposite. I mean, what I spent 20 years detailing how we are subtly siphoning money out of your pocket in hundreds of ways that I dug out of the statutes and the regulations to narrow groups of people at the rich, including Donald Trump, who is a major welfare king. is now on steroids under the Trump administration. This is increasing, not decreasing. I mean, remember, this is a man who ran against Goldman Sachs and then put six Goldman Sachs executives in high positions in the government. And policy after policy has been to, for example, there's a whole chapter about how what's going on inside the EPA and how the polluters are being turned loose. Worker deaths, about 4,800 people a year are killed on the job, electrocutions, falls, being crushed in machinery. This administration has stopped posting those deaths. And if you ask them for this, just the statistical data, how many people died in the most recent month you have data for, and what by what method did they die? You can't have that information anymore. This is not a government about anything but Donald Trump and Donald Trump's own belief in his greatness.
And I will throw you a pen because it looks like
– piece of paper.
A piece of paper. Okay. Normally, I have them lying all over the floor here, and I will give you that one.
It's for when we get calls.
We're passing that across the line here. You call these people termites.
Political termites.
This is the way termites will just eat away at the foundation of a house, for instance.
What's happened is that Trump didn't do this. Donald is a lazy guy, always has been. You know, during the campaign, he'd disappear for days at a time while claiming Hillary was lazy. If Donald says something, figure it's about him. He's projecting it onto other people. And you'll often hit the nail on the head with it. So Team Trump has put into these agencies people who are appointed as temporary federal executives for 130 days. Well, we're 380-some days into this administration, and they are still there illegally, and Congress is doing nothing. These are people you've never heard of. They primarily come from the industries that they're supposed to regulate. They are issuing instructions that are along the lines of don't do your job, don't do research, don't speak certain words. Tell us in writing in extreme detail how, if you're a polluter, for example, you can pollute and the government cannot successfully bring a case against you. And being good bureaucrats, they have turned this over to this administration. And, you know, you or I are not going to drop dead tomorrow. But our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren will have higher levels of asthma, heart disease, and cancer because of this. But by then, Donald Trump will be out of office.
Well, let me follow up on that, because on one level, it looks like the president has had few victories. We can talk about the tax bill, the budget deal that was just signed. There are the executive orders, which are often just signing ceremonies. But you're saying sort of behind the scenes, things are being dismantled.
That's exactly right. And our national security is being put in jeopardy. You know, Donald's first foreign trip, he went to Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. The Saudis are the largest financiers of terrorism in the world, hands down. And what did Trump do? He gave a speech lauding the Saudis for fighting terrorism. He then attacked the Qatari government. Where does America have its most important military base in the world? In Qatar, thanks to the Qatari government. Why are we seeing democracy, attempts at democracy in the Middle East? The Arab Spring, Al Jazeera, the television network in Arabic that freed people from only state-controlled news and allowed independent reporting. And you can like or dislike Al Jazeera's news, but right. It changed the ballgame. We don't have ambassadors in Libya, Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, among other countries. I'm sorry, if you're worried about terrorism, you need to have ambassadors there. In trade, two items if I can, Marty.
Sure.
If you're a small manufacturer, if you're Marty Moscowane Custom Products in Philadelphia and you sell overseas $500,000 a year, you can't hire somebody overseas to do this. The U.S. government has a program to help little manufacturers export goods. And some of those go into much bigger manufacturers as a result. For every dollar we as taxpayers spend subsidizing this, and it is absolutely a subsidy, there are sales of about $850. Now, I'm very much on record about disliking subsidies, but this is a subsidy I would say put more money into it if there's more opportunity, because it benefits Americans and American workers. Trump wants to zero it out of the budget.
Let me pick up on TPP because you mentioned trade. And obviously there are winners and losers when it comes to trade deals. I know you were a critic of TPP.
I was a very prominent critic of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Yep.
It is Trump pulled the U.S. out of it.
He killed it.
What has been the result?
Well, he has done, he's killed both the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the proposed Transatlantic Partnership, and he's done absolutely nothing except suggest we make some renegotiation of the South Korean trade deal, which I've also criticized and explained in detail the problems with it. But those are all fixable problems. So there's a vacuum. And what's happened in the Pacific where the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this trading zone, was supposed to, among other things, not only make the 12 participating countries plus the U.S. better off, but to contain China. Well, President Xi has now stepped forward with the Chinese plan, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. 15 Pacific Rim countries, not us, plus India. And when I was in Australia lecturing in the fall on both tax policy and Trump, every single person I talked to, government officials, academics, the woman who took care of my hotel room, the chambermaid, they all were saying, well, Australia is going to have to tilt away from America and towards Beijing because of trade policy. The most loyal ally America hasn't had in the world since World War II is Australia. They are lapdogs. And they are, because of Trump's incompetence, having to shift their interests and pivot away from Washington towards Beijing. This is terrible for America's political interests. It's terrible for liberty and freedom. China is, after all, run by nine thugs, a communist dictatorship. And in addition to that, we will in the long run not have the benefits of trade. We need better trade deals. I wouldn't disagree that Trump has a criticism we could do better on trade deals, but just getting rid of them makes us worse off than if we continued with the deals we had.
Let me ask you about the wall, which is obviously so prominent in the campaign to build the wall. Mexico was going to pay for it. And now we're seeing at least the rough outlines of a deal in Congress that might balance some kind of wall, not paid for by Mexico, with DACA, with allowing children brought here by their parents from other countries, allowing them to have some access to citizenship. How do you see that?
Well, I hope there are trustees of Penn and maybe the provost or other academic officers listening. Donald Trump did not earn a degree in economics at Penn. He was given it. And the proof of that
is... What is the difference? What does that mean?
It means he wasn't qualified for it, but they gave him a degree anyway. And the proof of that is his own statements on economics that I quote in both of my books, The Making of Donald Trump, and It's Even Worse Than You Think. Donald said, I'm going to make Mexico pay for the wall. He wouldn't tell us how. He gets in office, and then he says, we're going to put a 20% tariff on Mexican goods. Well, that means Americans will pay more for Mexican goods. We will pay for the wall. It also means competing American companies can raise prices by 19.9% and not lose any business. That'll cost us more money, too. Anybody who had a most basic understanding of economics would know that a tariff doesn't make Mexico pay for the wall. It is physically impossible to build a wall along the entire border from the Pacific Ocean to the Gulf of Mexico. General Kelly, the chief of staff in the White House, has since come out and said, you know, Trump doesn't know what he's talking about. He said it in more polite language than that, but he doesn't. And this issue of DACA, you know, I used to teach the law of the ancient world at Syracuse University to law students and graduate business students, the business law and the property and tax law. No country in the history of the world that's very wealthy has ever managed to seal its border from people in neighboring countries. Mm. Even if you could build a wall, people will find ways around it. And who is it who would do that and who has been doing it? It's the strivers. Penn has a study out now that I cite in the book that if you want to increase the American gross domestic product, the smartest, cheapest thing to do is double the number of migrants to our country from 800,000 a year to 1.6 million and have no regard to their education whatsoever. Because the people who will come are the ambitious ones, and by the time we get to their children and especially their grandchildren, they will be much better off. Our GDP will be 10% larger within what might be my lifetime, and I'm 69 years old, if we would follow that policy.
That is David K. Johnston, our guest on Radio Times today, talking about his new book, It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. I do want to get to some calls at 1-888-477-9499. A lot of comments coming in, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me, though, slip in a question here. And reading your book and having interviewed you before and interviewed, frankly, a lot of other people that have written about President Trump, it does feel that he has had, through his lifetime, enablers, whether it was the Casino Commission or whether it was bankers or the tax code or tax lawyers or regulators, that there have been people who have bailed him out and allowed him to be, I mean, frankly, become the president of the United States.
Oh, yeah.
Why is that, though?
Well, there are a whole bunch of factors. I mean, one of them is when he started out, his father, who had cheated the federal government out of a lot of money, so much so that President Eisenhower threw a fit in the White House about Fred Trump, had deep political connections. And one of the politicians most beholden to him, Abe Beame, was the mayor of New York when Donald started out. Donald hired skillful lawyers at suppressing law enforcement and defeating law enforcement like Roy Cohn. He beat four grand jury investigations. When he found out he was going to be caught for being a sales tax cheat, he ran to the government, confessed, and then turned in other people, a standard Trump trick, rat out others to protect yourself. He was tried twice civilly, not criminally, for income tax fraud and lost both times and got really nasty opinions. But all along the way, government did favors for him. You know, he brags about that, you know, buying politicians. The New Jersey Casino Control Commission took his side against bankers and allowed him to survive when he should have lost his casino license. But politically, that was very easy to do because of the 70-some banks owed money, only two were in New Jersey and their loans were small. And Donald was a major employer. So even though it violated the law, taking the side of a major employer against banks in New York and Chicago and Germany, easy.
Mm. Well, does that show a kind of smarts on his part?
Yes. Oh, no. I mean, Donald has some significant talents. He is, I call him, the greatest con artist in the history of the world. He's conned his way into many things. He's gotten away with not paying people. There are businesses right here in Philadelphia that were destroyed because he didn't pay them. In fact, as president, I tell in the new book, it's even worse than you think, about how he continued to fight paying somebody. And the grounds for not paying this businessman, his witness testified, Mr. Trump believes he's paid enough. He hadn't paid the amount the contract called for. And they even tried to trick this guy by giving him the wrong legal name of the entity if he wanted to sue. And so, sure enough, when he sued, Trump came to court and his lawyer said, well, you sued the wrong entity. And the judge said, no. He went and asked you the name of the entity. You gave him the wrong name. That's fraud. We're going to let this case continue.
I guess my question is, so is it a certain savvy?
Oh, yeah, he knows how to play the game. Yeah, okay. Donald understands how to use government for his benefit, and he's masterful at the news media. I mean, fake news is almost an invention of Donald Trump, and what he doesn't like are people like Wayne Barrett, who the book is dedicated to, who was the first journalist to question what Trump said and check it out, and especially me. Because instead of just reporting what he says, which can make for great stories if you don't care about the facts, you know, I go and check, well, what's the public record? When I revealed in the Inquirer back in 1990 that Donald wasn't a billionaire, he called me a liar for 4 months. Then he had to put the documents proving I was right in the record that showed a negative net worth. And we ran in the Inquirer above the masthead a lead that said, you are probably worth more than Donald Trump.
Ouch.
Yeah, well, he felt a lot more than ouch, I assure you.
Well, I do want to get to all of that, but let me first get a couple of callers in. We've got David from Kensington joining us on Radio Times. Hi, David. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. I wanted to ask a quick question, mostly about kind of the emotional condition of Donald Trump. I'm an artist in Philadelphia and a writer and also a business person, and grew up in New Jersey, so was in the realm of Trump as he did his shenanigans throughout Atlantic City. And I did start a show after his really offensive comments in the first debate towards Megyn Kelly. I started to develop some artwork that really dealt with his emotional situation and kind of the abusive nature of that towards both women and frankly towards men as well. And I've always tried to focus on the intergenerational
David, yeah, I hate to do this to you, but if you can get to your question, because I'm looking at the clock and I know our guest wants to respond.
Do you, in your research and knowledge of Donald Trump, do you see much evidence of severe emotional abuse in his upbringing? I know his older brother died of alcoholism.
Yeah, no,
Sure, David, thanks for the call.
Thank you, David. Donald Trump is a 71-year-old man with the emotional development of a 13-year-old. That's when his father sent him off to a military academy because he was constantly getting into trouble, and he liked to throw rocks at babies in playpens. He called it to make the baby cry. He wrote in one of his books that he punched his second-grade teacher. I don't believe that story, but it's indicative of his thinking. Be glad you're not Donald Trump. Donald is a man who has never known and never will know joy or contentment. He cannot laugh at himself. All the rest of us who are parents learned, you know, if you want to be any good at parenting, you've got to be able to laugh at yourself. Donald takes enormous umbrage and cannot laugh. Have you ever seen him laugh in public? I've seen a few forced laughs that are very, you know, very minor. But this is a man who, you know, he's the dark side of Groundhog Day. He's been living as a 13-year-old emotionally for his entire life. You know, we all went through a year of transition that was horrible. Imagine spending your whole life in that. And that's why it's twisted him. It explains his attitudes about women. It explains his bullying and a lot of other things. He's not a grown-up. And when he doesn't know things, he makes things up, which gets him into other trouble.
Well, and there have been a lot of controversies about diagnosing him and coming up with labels. And obviously, you're not a psychologist
psychiatrist. And I don't do that in the book. What I do in the book is use the Army manual for who do we promote as military officers. And Trump, who dodged the draft with his bone spurs he doesn't remember having or where they were, there are six standards you can distill from the Army Field Manual on promoting officers. Empathy for others, taking responsibility for decisions, recognizing when you've made an error and correcting, being respectful of others, etc. If Donald Trump had been drafted in Vietnam, he would have been a junior first lieutenant the day in and the day out. He would not have been promoted based on the Army Field Manual.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with investigative journalist, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David K. Johnston. And we are talking about Donald Trump, someone he has covered for more than 30 years, beginning with his time at the Philadelphia Inquirer. He covered Atlantic City and the development of casinos down there, and has continued to cover the president now. And he's got a new book. It's even worse than you think, what the Trump administration is doing to America. 1-888-477-94. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Artie Moscowane talking with David K. Johnston about someone he knows a lot about, someone he's been covering for almost three decades now, and that is Donald Trump as a businessman and, of course, as president. And again, his new book is It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. Let me read some comments here. An email from Stu. It's not only Trump. He's only the result of 30 years of GOP strategy, tactics, and policies. If we fail to acknowledge that, our democracy is endangered. An email says, didn't Trump benefit from racially motivated backlash against his predecessor as much as from his self-made successful businessman image? Also an email from a listener, how long has Trump been trying to open a hotel in Moscow? Can you take that last one, David?
Sure. Trump's been trying to open a hotel in Moscow since 1987. He's been getting money from Russian criminals since 1983 in deals that are often squirrely. And let me just deal with the other two very quickly. Stu is quite right about the 30 years. In the book, I make the explicit point that our democracy is in very, very deep trouble, but Donald Trump is the symptom. He is not the disease. And I was full discussion about the disease and what we need to do if we want our liberties to endure and the idea that this country was created on, which is to ennoble the human spirit to see what human beings could achieve. And yes, Donald benefited absolutely from the backlash about Obama. Remember, it was Donald who came up with this nonsense claim that Trump wasn't born in Hawaii. I've got investigators in Hawaii, and what they're turning up is just, it's incredible, it's incredible. Never heard about that, did you?
You kind of said never mind.
You never mind, yes.
Well, how about the hotels in Moscow?
Well, he's made at least five attempts to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. It might be not just a hotel, but an office building and residential facility. The most recent ones, he has used a twice convicted felon named Felix Sater, who he claims he wouldn't be able to identify if they were in the room together, even though I document with photos and videotape that they have traveled together on his private jet for years and done years of dealings. And Felix Sater is just one of the many violent felons who are very closely associated with Trump's actions, but that have not been reported on very much in the press. Felix has been more than anybody else.
an email from Esta. I was just in Australia and New Zealand and heard the same statements that Mr. Johnson has mentioned. Not only is China becoming Australia and New Zealand's prime trading partners, they're also buying land and resources in both countries at an alarming pace. Again, everyone is talking about it and worried. Just to underscore what you
it
said
is,
earlier.
This is, in the long run, disastrous for America.
And, I mean, if we had stayed into an improved TPP, would we still get that same email?
No, I think that we could have. We were outmaneuvering the Chinese, and the Chinese knew it. And China is a country whose leaders, you know, I've been there about nine times to teach investigative reporting to low levels. They don't want it at the top. They want it at low levels. China is a country that is being run by people who are thinking about the future. When Shanghai disappears because of rising water, they can take ocean-going ships 1,500 miles into the interior because of the Three Gorges Dam. They just pick up and move. The highways they're building, they not only put the interstates to shame when they were new, they put the Autobahn to shame. They're the most fantastic highways I've ever ridden on.
And apparently you can just – I mean, here we are struggling to figure out our own infrastructure challenges and needs.
I love it when politicians say we can't afford to fix the infrastructure. I don't know how they think commerce is going to move when we're down to rutted roads.
Let me get Todd from Overbrook Farms to join us. Hi, Todd. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Just curious. I have friends on Facebook, some kids I grew up with in high school in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And they are an absolute wall. They're an example of an absolute wall that will not listen to anything that is negative about Trump. And I don't want to promote anything that's negative about Trump. I want to try to get the truth across to them. How do we get the truth across, these simple facts across, to people who have built this wall around themselves and refuse to listen? I'm receptive to all this information and have been all along because it's simple truth.
Todd, this is
a real wall.
Sure, Todd. I appreciate it. Go ahead.
Todd, thank you. This is a real fundamental problem, and it's not limited to Trump. We have created a society that's the opposite of what Senator Moynihan used to say. You know, we're all entitled to our own opinions, but not to our own facts. And I do a lot of right-wing radio, and I get lots of calls from people like that. And then I just simply do two things. I politely listen to what they want to say, and then I present them with specific facts that what they've said suggests would trouble them. For example, I was on Christian Broadcasting Network and pointed out that, well, Donald is hailed by that network as a fine Christian family man. He has called people who turn the other cheek, Sermon on the Mount, fools, idiots, and schmucks, and he says his life philosophy is revenge. If somebody simply declines a favor to you, hit him in the face 15 times. You cannot be a Christian and espouse that as your life philosophy. And I called him out on it, but I did it after letting them, you know, have their say. This is a real problem, though, that's
changed,
much bigger than Trump.
Know?
I don't know, because I don't know who was listening to the show, but in the this is the reason the founders, the framers of our Constitution, were so worried about the mob. They created this conservative document. The Electoral College was there as a backstop in case a madman or an incompetent or a crazy person were the popular electee to be president. It's why we have a 6-year Senate and a 4-year president and a 2-year House and rules about how many votes and how long it takes to change things because they were concerned about inflamed passions. We really do need to work in this. And the real underlying problem, Todd, to all of this is our education system designed in the late 1800s was intended to produce drones. It was not intended to produce critical thinking skills.
Todd, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me segue to the emoluments clause. And this is something, I mean, we are learning some things, hopefully, as a result of our election and certainly the campaign as well. What do we need to know about the emoluments clause and how does that apply or not apply to President Trump?
The framers of our Constitution, who created it specifically to give us the power to tax ourselves, were very worried about foreign influence. They knew that there were European monarchs who were secretly on the payroll of other countries and were traitors to their own people. So they put the word emoluments in the Constitution three times. It simply means, in the language of the times, economic gain.
Right. And something of value.
Something of value. So there's a specific emoluments clause on foreign money. You can't receive a gift of any kind if you're president without Congress's permission. Trump hasn't been given permission to accept anything. But foreign governments are staying at his hotels, and he said, I'll disgorge the profits, except he created a big loophole. You can direct bill or you can charge to a credit card. Well, if you direct Bill, they're going to – I think I have it right. I may have them backwards. But if you do it one way, they're going to disgorge the profits. If you do it the other, they aren't. So everybody's doing the one where they don't disgorge the profits who's doing business with him. Then there's the domestic clause, which applies specifically to the president and says, beyond his salary and perks, the president may receive no emoluments from the states or any of them.
Hmm. Interpret that.
It means that he can't get any income from state governments or other ways from the federal government. Well, we've spent a fortune renting at full retail golf carts at Donald Trump golf courses to follow him around, rooms at his hotels, meals at Mar-a-Lago for Secret Service agents and government officials. This is absolutely illegal. Here's the problem. The only court ruling we have says ordinary citizens have no standing, no legal right to bring a case against the president. Congress has to do that. And as we've seen, Congress is not doing that.
Well, and why is that?
I think the Republican leadership has made their bed with Donald. They've decided they're better off going along with him. And shockingly, they are giving up many of the perquisites and institutional interests. Max Boot, a very principled, very conservative Republican.
Yep.
Was he just on your show?
Yes, he was.
And I'll bet you Max said it's the duty of every Republican to vote out every Republican. If you're a Republican, you need to vote against Republicans because they are not doing the job. And he's right about that. We need to have two viable parties that talk about ideas and compromise and contend for public support, not bowing to Donald Trump. And after all, this is America. We don't bow to anybody.
You mentioned something in this, and frankly, I did not see this when there was the inaugural parade, the motorcade in Washington, D.C., that the limousine, the Beast, actually stopped in front of his hotel, and he and his family got out.
Yes. The camera that was in a truck ahead, the pool camera, did not pivot one bit. None of the TV networks told people where they stopped, and it was in front of the Trump Hotel. Everybody who is seeking favors from this administration, foreign governments, rich people, industries, specific corporations, got the message. If you want something from this administration, you will pay tribute to Donald. And there's a lawsuit I talk about in the book of a business where all the lobbyists have quit coming to that place and they now go to the Trump Hotel. The Trump Organization projected the hotel would lose money. It's making money hand over fist. The bar is taking in $68,000 a night. And that included the days before he became president. The government of Kuwait, which is really a family real estate business, the Al Sabah family that calls itself a government, they moved their party, their annual party in Washington, from the Four Seasons to the Trump Hotel. And of course, it's so obvious that he is violating the Emoluments Clause, but Congress won't do anything about it.
And we have ethics commissions that are supposed to rule on all this
right.
stuff. Again, getting back to the point I made earlier, which is that there have been people along the way who have allowed him to behave as he wishes.
Yep.
Let me see what Sue from Princeton has to say. Sue, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
I just want to know if your guest thinks that Donald Trump could be reelected.
Yes, I do. I think it is possible. I don't think it's likely, but on the day that he announced in 2015, I said, well, you need to pay attention. He's serious this time. He might get elected. He might get the Republican nomination. He might get elected. And there were people right off the bat who, you know, said, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, you know,
yeah,
I was right.
Why do you think – I mean, so much can happen. I'm thinking of the Mueller investigation. Obviously, we do not know what they're going to come
right.
up with.
And we don't know that they're going to get their report out. At the end of the day, we don't know that. I mean, we do know that Trump has been warned in one way that the New York State Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, who's an elected Democrat, has been working cooperatively with the Mueller investigation. So if Mueller is shut down, Schneiderman will probably move forward. But you know, and when Mueller's report comes out, I don't think the American people are prepared to learn how deeply disloyal Donald Trump is. This is going to be a
disloyal.
Real
disloyal.
Yes, Donald Trump's not a loyal American. I mean, just listen to how he talks about the Kremlin. Look at how one of his sons went and asked the Russians to use their secret communications apparatus in Washington to communicate secretly during the transition with Moscow. The offer of help from the Russian government, which is a crime. If you read the email, it wasn't a hi, let's go out on a date email. It was a hi, let's go to somewhere this weekend sort of email. And any loyal American in that circumstance should know to pick up the phone, call the FBI, and say, I need someone in counterintelligence. You don't lie, deny, cover up, and work with these people.
Mm. Let me ask you about taxes. Candidate Trump has said that you can't see my taxes because they're being audited. Now, President Trump, a year into the presidency, I don't know how long audits go on, but there's certainly a question about what is in his taxes. You got a page mailed to
two pages mailed to you
back at, from a tax return of 2005. But it looked, at least on paper, as if he paid something like $38 million in taxes on $153 million.
Oh, Marty, I'm so glad you said that.
Well, no, let me just finish here. So, and if you do the math there, that's about a third. That seemed like...
Well, it's 24%, but here's the
but that
the
seemed like a... that.
That's,
go ahead.
So, I think Donald sent this or authorized sending it to me, okay?
Well, I was going to ask you about
that. Because it's a client copy, and Donald has a long history of leaking about himself. And what did it show? On the surface, it showed he made $3 million a week, and he paid $36 million in taxes. The reason you said 38 is the White House press office put out that number, which is not true. And the New York Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Washington Post, everybody quoted the press release when they had the document right in front of them that showed the real number. It's a good example of how, you know, Trump gets away with stuff. But of that tax, $36 million was alternative minimum tax from his real estate deals. It's a refundable tax. Ordinary people like you and me, if we pay it, we don't get it back. We just don't get it. But if you're in real estate, you can get it back. So what Donald really did was loan the government $31 million mm-hmm. for a year or two at zero interest and then got it back. And his real tax rate? Less than 3.5%. And what is the tax rate of the poorest half of Americans who file tax returns? Mm-hmm. People who made not $3 million a week, but $300 a week? It's more than 3.5%.
But isn't that an example of Donald Trump using the tax system to his benefit?
Yes, and he used an illegal tax shelter. Congress declared that tax shelter to be illegal within weeks of learning of it. I mean, they moved the Republicans with lickety-split speed to stop this. It's where Donald got to take as a tax loss the money he didn't pay back to the banks. It should have been income. So he got not a $900 million benefit, but a $1.8 billion benefit out of it. And unfortunately, as Congress often does, well, they stopped a tax shelter. Those people who already bought the illegal tax shelter get to go away with their ill-got gains.
Let me read some more comments here. We're almost out of time here. One from Mary from South Philly. What can we do about this embarrassment of our country? An email from David. I would bet my life that Trump is personally enriching himself by investing in military and private prison stock. Is there any way to investigate this?
Donald doesn't buy stocks very much. You know, he had a very small portfolio. He doesn't have anywhere near the wealth he claims. His financial statement shows $1.4 billion. Not 10 plus billion, and even that I've shown is very inflated. There's no evidence, and never has been, that he has $1 billion, but he is enriching himself. And, you know, the solution to this problem is very simple. It's up to us. The whole point of the U.S. is we decide our fate. If you like Donald Trump, then you should vote for those people in Congress who are bowing down to him. And if you don't like him, register to vote. Get other people to register to vote. On election day, plan in advance and go somewhere and drive people to the polls. Because if we continue to have the same Congress, not only will Trump continue and possibly get a second term, but much more significantly, someone without Donald's deficits, someone who is rational, competent as a business person, strategic in his thinking, will become president of the U.S., and it will be the beginning of the end of this experiment in what happens if we ennoble the human spirit to see what we can achieve, and our liberties will dwindle.
We are ending on that note. David K. Johnston, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. The book is called It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. You can sign up for our newsletter. You can also listen to us on satellite radio. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show was produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you for joining us.